Good evening. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers with Health Styles, brought to you by the Hunter College Center for Health, Media, and Policy. Hydrofracking is a new term in our lexicon these days. It's going on upstate New York. It's going on in Pennsylvania, in Colorado. And there are a lot of people who are concerned about what it might do to our health and to our water and to our environment. And here to talk with us today about hydrofracking is Owen Crowley, who is with United for Action. And Owen, what is United for Action?
We are, you can say, the get on the bus people. We work with a lot of other groups. Some of them are more legislatively oriented. Some are more scientifically oriented. We get the word out. We get people to events. And we drive awareness and action around this issue.
Great. And we also have with us Dr. Peggy Rafferty, a registered nurse and associate professor at New York City College of Technology, Department of Nursing, here in New York City. Peggy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Mason, for having us. This is a very important issue, and nurses especially need to be very concerned about this because it's so important for health.
So how did you get into this?
It was an accident. My sister lives in Catskill Mountains, and you know there's a lot of discussion about leasing land, and farmers are destitute and really need money, and so people are thinking about doing this. And so I started to research it, and I started to become increasingly concerned about the health risks that are associated with this process.
So let's talk for a moment about what hydrofracking is.
Well, it's natural gas drilling.
Yeah. Well, the old fashioned of drilling for gas, the old way to do it is you put a hole in the ground and the gas comes out. The modern way to drill for gas is much more aggressive. What you do is you drill the hole deeper into solid rock. Then you turn the drill horizontally and go about a mile further. You do that up to 16 times per location. And then into each of those 16 wells, you pump in between 3 and 8 million gallons of water mixed with chemicals and sand at super high pressures to crack the rock and liberate the gas. But the trouble is when you liberate the gas that way, you also liberate a lot of stuff that's in the ground that you don't want to come out. Petrochemicals, radioisotopes, plus all the chemicals that you just put into the ground also come out and poison the land, the water, the air, and just do a lot of damage.
So when you pump all of that in, you're also taking out all that you pumped in. Is that correct?
You're taking out all that you pumped in,
plus more.
Except what stays in the ground and mixes in with the groundwater.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Plus what's in there. You turn the earth inside out, and when you do that, you bring a lot of stuff to the surface that you don't necessarily want on the surface.
And Peggy?
And the chemicals that they're using, it's actually proprietary information, so people don't even know what they're putting in the ground. So it's about 600 different types of chemicals, and all the products use different chemicals. And so Theo Corburn, who's a physician who's done a lot of the initial work, published a paper that's available on the web.
Where was it published?
It's going to be published in the International Journal of Human and Ecological Risk Assessment. But you can actually read the paper on the web if you just go to TEDx, the Endocrine Disruption Exchange.
Do it one more time.
TEDx, the Endocrine Disruption Exchange.
And is that a URL or is that a Google?
If you just Google it.
TEDx.
Yes. And you just Google it and you can read the whole paper, which is incredibly detailed. She found that there's, very significant health risks that are associated with these chemicals. 75% of them affect the skin, the eyes, the respiratory, and the GI system. 40 to 50% affect the brain, the nervous system, the immune, and the cardiovascular system. 37% affect the endocrine system. And that's all the reproduction. And so this is of a tremendous concern because your endocrine system is very sensitive to small changes. Mm-hmm. So, it might be that, 20 years down the road, people are going to have an infertility problem because of these very minor ingestion of chemicals that are in their water. And then 25% cause cancer. So if we look at what the composition of the fracking fluid, there's a lot of concern about this. And there's been multiple cases across the United States where water has been contaminated. And numerous patient reports, people who have lived near drills have expressed tremendous health problems. So, and of course, this is self-report, and, you know, in terms of, you know, medical evidence, it's not a, you know, randomized controlled trial. But, you know, patients or, you know, people who live near this are have headaches all the time, their children have nosebleeds, people have developed cancer, their animals have lost all their hair. So some really, you know, general malaise, I mean, some really dramatic health effects that for people who live near wells. And then we really don't know anything about what's happening to people who are getting the lower dose when this gets dumped in the river and it's not, they're not even testing for it. So there's tremendous concern about this issue. And the medical people are starting to just get on board with this. Mount Sinai School of Medicine had a wonderful conference about 2 weeks ago about toxins and health. And, you know, so it was very, very well attended. And it was a really excellent.
Just on hydrofracking?
Well, they had asbestos
well.
And plastics, uh-huh. too. But, the you know, there was a whole significant component that they actually partnered with United for Health and Newark H2O. There are a number of hydrofracking groups that are opposed to hydrofracking. So that was a really important sort of step in the right direction. They also have a Facebook page, Physicians Against Fracking, that has started up in the last 2 weeks. The different medical communities in New York State, a lot of physicians have come out against hydrofracking. Just today, the Colorado School of Public Health in Denver issued a very complex report that really has a lot of concerns about the effects of hydrofracking, specifically the amount of benzene in the air, which is a known carcinogen and neurotoxin. So the evidence, the medical evidence, is starting to come out, and it's, you know, very problematic.
An animal. There's a picture that's been floating around of this cow that was died from. From, I don't know whether it was the fumes or what, but do you know which picture?
I'm not sure about that picture, but in near Shreveport, Louisiana, there was an overflow of a pond where they, you know, the waste comes out of the well and they collect it, and more than a dozen, I think it was something like 18 cows, died from drinking that stuff.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And then, I mean, I knew that hydrofracking was a hot issue. But when I saw the documentary Gasland mm-hmm. that talked about Colorado's experience with this, and they showed people who turned on their water and lit their water.
Yeah, there's been numerous, and the streams bubble with the gas, the natural gas. So, you know, obviously water on fire is a concern that this is something is wrong here.
Water storage tanks blowing up.
And the air pollution is very significant too. The liberated gas, you know, gets in with all these diesel trucks and creates incredible increases in the levels of ozone.
Diesel trucks to.
Well, they are all this. All of this creates a lot of industry because you have to develop all these well pads and there's trucks going in and out, and so all that diesel exhaust is. You know, mixing with the gases that are being liberated. And so in places like Wyoming that had no problems with ozone are now as polluted as Los Angeles, with documented increases in asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So there are some very significant health risks. So we have an opportunity in New York State to stop hydrofracking.
But why should New York City people care about this?
Because it's our watershed. We have one of the best water supplies in the world. Our watershed, you know, supplies 5% of the drinking water for the United States. We have a wonderful unfiltered system. To try to filter it would cost billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be very cautious and to not move forward with this. You know, water is a precious resource. And as nurses, we know that there is nothing more important to your health than water. So while we need energy, we do need to turn on the lights. Water is as precious a resource as energy. So I think that, you know, with the Halliburton loophole, they dismantle hydrofracking. The Clean Water Act does not apply to it. The Clean Air Act, the Superfund, they disabled all of those environmental stopgap measures, so they can, you know, just proceed without that.
This is a very important thing. So in 2005, when we had two oilmen in the White House, there was a bill that was passed. It was an Energy Act, and it had a provision that's now called the Halliburton loophole, because it specifically exempts this process of water injection for the purpose of extracting, you know, gas from the Clean Drinking Water Act, Superfund Act, protections against air pollution. So the companies have no responsibility, basically, except for one thing. They were still forbidden from injecting benzene into the ground, but they did that anyway. That's been well documented. So this is kind of a Wild West kind of an atmosphere. They go in there. This has never been studied, right? So one reason why you have a lot of anecdotal, you know, stories about people getting sick is because it hasn't been a study. Nobody knows this stuff, right? There's been no due diligence, no protections in place, no baseline and follow-up, you know, no longitudinal studies whatsoever. And to the extent that people have looked at things, they've looked at it in one place, in one incident, and so there's no cumulative effects, right? When you have one well, okay, something happens. When you have 30,000 or 60,000 mm-hmm. wells in an area, which is the case in, you know, that could happen in New York State, you can have a lot of more effects. These things add up. And this makes it very difficult. And when the chemicals themselves are secret, you can't really test for what you don't know is mm-hmm. there, right?
So Pennsylvania, there's this huge Marcellus Shale. That's what they're going into shale to get this.
Marcellus Shale, and now there's talk of Utica Shale, which also is another formation that kind of overlaps and gets into this region and up into Quebec. And up which, by the way, has put a stop to progress towards hydrofracking.
Canada has or Quebec?
Quebec.
Interesting. So my understanding is they're already doing this in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How widespread in Pennsylvania?
It's growing rapidly. I couldn't give you a statistic at this point. I don't have a map in my head, but there are parts of Pennsylvania where it's growing. One thing that's very important for people in this region to know, you already heard some of the reasons why we need to be very cautious about this, why we really can't let it happen. One thing that's interesting is that when I talk to people in New York City, they don't just talk about the watershed, because when you describe what's happening in Pennsylvania and upstate New York, that's enough for them. They say, you know, that's horrible. We shouldn't let it happen anywhere. So I want to make that clear. But there's a region called the Delaware River Basin. And there is a kind of an interstate / federal commission that was set up in the early 60s to manage the water resources of the Delaware River Basin. It has five members, the Corps of Engineers, which is the federal representative, and then Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York. One thing that's happening right now, literally, as we speak. That commission, which is responsible for maintaining and developing and protecting, you know, what's now considered to be the pristine water resources of the Delaware River Basin, is under a lot of pressure, apparently, to permit drilling in that basin. And, you know, there are very, very few people who say, oh, I'm a landowner, I need this money, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is that this air pollution and this water pollution, you know, it doesn't get up to the end of the property line and say, oh, well, I can't go any further. I got to stop right here, right? It doesn't get up to the state line and say, oh, no, I can't go further. So there's been a lot of opposition in Philadelphia, in New York City, in Pennsylvania, groups like DCS, Damascus Citizens for Sustainability.
What is it?
DCS, no, Damascus Citizens for Sustainability.
Oh.
Terrific group. NYH2O, which was just mentioned here.
What is it?
NYH2O.
NYH2O.
Right. United for Action, my organization, www.unitedforaction.org.
Good.
If you visit our website and go to the resources page, you see lots of groups and lots of action, you know, lots of literature that you can follow up on and learn all about this. But one thing we're driving right now is commenting and letter writing targeting the Delaware River Basin Commission, urging them, giving them reasons to stop and not do this. So if people visit our website, you can download a letter or you can follow instructions to do more in-depth commenting. The deadline for those comments is April 15, 5 p.m.
Give that website again.
UnitedForAction.org.
And www. For is F-O-R.
F-O-R.
Mm-hmm. So I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of Health Styles, and I'm here with Owen Crowley with United for Action. That's getting them on the bus kind of organization that's addressing this issue of hydrofracking and sustainable energy issues. And Dr. Peggy Rafferty, a registered nurse and associate professor at New York City College of Technology in the Department of Nursing. So we're talking about hydrofracking, and so there was this sense that the state and the city were going to oppose doing hydrofracking in the New York City watershed area upstate. And we already have really bad relations with people upstate because we flooded whole communities to create this watershed. So there's still a lot of resentment about New York City getting too many resources, being able to flood communities up there to create the watershed. And then for them to hear that, well, the state and city would oppose the watershed area being drilled, but not other places outside of the watershed, was infuriating to many upstate people. To what extent, where are we at today with the watershed is hands-off or not?
I'm going to give a little bit of a different impression that I have. And I've lived both in upstate. I was raised in way upstate New York in Fredonia, which, by the way, is the very first place that a gas well was ever drilled in the world. And I've lived in New York continuously since 1989. First of all, when you have a government, so the New York City government, you know what? It's their job to take care of New York City. So they'll say, we need to protect the watershed, and that's fine. But when you talk to people from New York City, they have a lot of sympathy for what's happening upstate. And when I talk to people from upstate, they really want to see that New York City supports this cause. Mm-hmm. It's an easy sell. When you explain to people a little bit about, you know, well, sure, we have a water supply, you know, but so does Elmira, you know, so do the people living on this farm, you know, that also needs to be protected. Right now, there's been a kind of a peeling off, you might say a political peeling off, not by the people who are anti-fracking, but by the people who are pro-fracking, because this helps them. We have 50% of the population here around New York City. And as a political strategy, I would think that if you wanted to kind of divide and conquer, why not divide the state in half and then plow forward? You go up to upstate New York, and before you know it, it'll be happening in New York City watershed too.
So you believe that the watershed will not be hands off?
I don't believe that. I believe that that's being earnestly put forward. I don't think it'll work.
Why?
Because as this gains momentum, as it has in Pennsylvania, you'll get more and more alignment by regulatory bodies, by moneyed interests, by industry captured agencies. You know, in Pennsylvania, if you look at what's happening there, there's recently a directive, they may have withdrawn it, but they tried to do it, that would have directed anybody working for the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection to get permission from the head of the department just to report a violation.
Wow.
And last year, even though they had a Democratic governor last year, the Pennsylvania Department of Homeland Security at one point was labeling anybody who was against drilling an environmental extremist, quote unquote. They were taking the names even of people going to see Gasland and giving those names to gas industry people. So that just shows you that when you let this thing in the door, it corrupts, it's a corrupting influence. Not only does it corrupt the land and the water and the air, but it corrupts governance and it takes that over.
Well, and look, the reality is when we look at what's going on in the Middle East and the potential for that oil not to be available here, and we have people who are trying to figure out how do we make sure we have enough energy in this country, or else we'll have riots in the streets. Aren't you going to be very surprised if they don't allow, if it's pushed through regardless of what people want?
When there's a new mantra that I hear. With this shale gas, you know, Marcellus Shale is the Saudi Arabia of natural gas.
Yes.
You know what? Well, people in Saudi Arabia do not seem very happy. Hmm. That's my first answer. My second answer is there are other choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at a New York State study that's cited by the gas industry commonly, talking about the increasing need for natural gas, and they make an assertion about, you know, well, downstate, here's literally what they say. They say that 80% of the 5% growth in demand for natural gas in New York State will be in and around New York City. So when you hear the industry make claims like that, and they cite a New York State study, you know, it sounds like the lawyers wrote that one. So I went and looked at that. And in fact, the demand curve for natural gas for New York City region, first of all, the baseline for that assertion, which they made in 2010, was 2007. According to that graph, all of the growth happened by 2010, and then it went down a little bit. So first of all, I think that the urgency of getting more gas is exaggerated. And there are other choices such as wind, tide. You know, we already have a tide experiment taking place in the East River, for example. Just today or yesterday, it was Friday in the New York Times, there's an article about the development of offshore wind farms in the Atlantic Ocean, for which, you know, there's already been a lot of investment in terms of laying some of the basic infrastructure for that. There are other choices. You really need to go this way.
So right now, what's happening in terms of politically what's going on with this in Albany? So there's some legislation that's being put forth?
Good question. A couple of things. First of all, another thing to look for on our website, there's going to be an April 11 lobbying and kind of a demonstration day in Albany. That's Monday, April 11. And there's a couple of buses leaving from New York City.
Yes, very easy to register. I just registered last night. You just go to the United for Action website. The bus costs $10, leaves at like 6:15 in the morning. And everyone should really be there because it's very important that Albany see this demonstrate, you know, a very strong demonstration.
And the website again is?
www.unitedforaction.org.
Okay.
But right now, there's a bit of a moratorium in place, partial moratorium.
Right, it's partial.
And I don't want to get too wonky here, but the process is that there's a generic environmental statement that's being drafted by the state, deeply flawed in its first couple of iterations. But the purpose of the statement is so that, you know, every time you drill a well, if you don't have a generic statement, you have to do all the research yourself, very costly, and in fact, you can't do it. So the state wants to produce this generic statement, which the industry can, you know, basically reference and say, well, here, we're going to, there's your environmental impact statement, now we're going to just get a permit to drill the well. In the last revision of the statement, there were thousands and thousands of comments and observations about where it was lacking and where it was incorrect and things like that. And the new version of that is due out at the end of June. So Governor Patterson, before he left office in December, he vetoed a moratorium bill on hydrofracking, but then he issued an executive order moratorium on hydrofracking that didn't really cover everything, but it helps. When this environmental statement is released, which is expected to be the end of June, there's going to be another comment period, and presumably it'll be revised and released again. So this is kind of what's happening. So the state is kind of going slow. What's unknown is the disposition. Well, the governor has said some things that sound favorable to environmental management, but we don't know all the answers yet.
And where, so the governor, we don't know where the governor's really going to come down on this?
I don't. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But we also want to make a point that, you know, this is important to us. And we have, I think it's an opportunity for the people of New York State to assert their priorities here.
I mean, this is the biggest public health disaster of our century. I mean, and we have the opportunity to prevent this in New York State. And I think in terms of the upstate, downstate, I mean, you know, all the farms are upstate. And so, you know, if they, it'll be in the milk, it'll be the cows, you know, all the fruits and vegetables at the farmer's market, you know, so it's...
And they do make it quite lucrative for these farmers to do, allow the
they give
the drilling to happen on their farms, right?
Yeah.
But it's not worth it.
Yet, a lot of the people in our movement are landowners from upstate.
Yeah, because they know what happened.
Right. And they're in a real jeopardy because if people adjacent to their property lease, when they pass a certain threshold, then they're in effect forced into the deal, and they don't want that. Even some of the people who've leased, there's an organization upstate called Fleeced, which are people that naively signed leases and then came to realize what it is that they committed themselves to.
So who are some of the companies, just so people know the names of these companies?
Oh, okay.
Exxon, BP.
Yeah, all the big ones. There's even a Norwegian company. It'll come to me the name of it. But there's a Norwegian company that's very active here. And I actually talked to a camera crew from Norway that was here for some hearings. And they told me that in Norway, Hydrofracking is illegal on land.
Wow.
And yet, wow, a Norwegian company, yeah, is here to, yeah, promote hydrofracking, yeah, on our land. Yeah. We let, yeah, it happen.
So in the, we only have about 30 seconds left as time goes very quickly. So let's tell folks one more time what they can do to take action.
I would say as a start, visit our website, www.unitedforaction.org. You can join with us in the type of things we do, but we also have links to many other organizations that do different things in different places. We're all about building a community and getting people on the bus and getting people involved in the way that is most suitable to them, where they can be the most effective.
And there is a bus, actually, that you can get on?
Yeah, on Monday, next Monday, a week from today. Yeah.
And if you go to the website, unitedforaction.org, you can sign up right there for this bus?
You can sign up right there. You can also see how to comment on the DRBC process.
DRBC process?
The Delaware River Basin Commission, okay, that thing about. And there's also a pipeline project that we're making a lot of noise about that would transport a lot of gas to New York.
Well, so, this is clearly a very important issue for all of our communities, upstate, downstate, and it's a really important issue for us to stay on top of. We did a program on Hillsdales on this several months ago. My colleague Barbara Glickstein did one. But we think it's really important to keep people up to date on what's going on and encourage people to make their wishes known. So I want to thank Owen Crowley with United for Action for coming on today's program on Hillsdales. Thank you, Owen.
Thank you.
And that's at go to www.unitedforaction.org. And I want to thank Dr. Peggy Rafferty, a registered nurse and associate professor of nursing at New York City College of Technology, part of City University of New York. Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of Hillsdales, that's brought to you by the Hunter College Center for Health, Media, and Policy. You can follow us online at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. You've been listening to Hillsdales on WBAI 99.5 FM New York.